Okay, for our next presentation, Harvey Checkaway is going to speak about partnerships among the biomedical sciences, social sciences, and humanities for environmental epidemiology research in developing economies.
Thank you, Bess. Okay. I want to acknowledge colleagues who discussed this project with me. And just start out with some basic concepts, but just take a second, sort of truth in advertising. My career is an epidemiologist, and I've spent most of it studying occupational health, non-infectious diseases, so this is really sort of a lifelong passion of mine. In terms of basic concepts, workers, and that includes adults and kids, are often underserved members of populations around the world. And as you know, workplace exposures often represent the high-dose scenarios for toxic exposures, and we tend to think of those as the tip of the iceberg. And as a result, findings from workplace studies will inform us about risks in the population worldwide, so just throughout the population. That includes air pollution, particulates, gases, metals, pesticides, and many other factors. Well, the underlying premise is that the types of things I've been doing most of my career and my colleagues who do occupational health research epidemiologically work very well in developed countries, in the U.S., Western Europe, Canada. It's very effective, and it has been. However, most of the exposures in the underserved populations are not necessarily in Western countries. And what we've been doing all these years doesn't really work in developing economies. And I'll show you an example from my own experience as kind of a case point. As a result of that, we epidemiologists who do health research and worker populations need to engage partners in the social sciences, which we do pretty well, but also in the humanities. Here's the example. This is a project I've been working on for the past 4 years. It's a study of Parkinsonism in Shanghai textile workers. A little background on the study. Cotton dust, which is the most common exposure in the textile industry, is contaminated with a material called endotoxin. It's from a bacterial source, and it's known that it also causes Monday morning chest tightness, if you've seen the movie Norma Rae, perhaps. But it's also an experimental model of Parkinsonism in rodents. Our study is investigating retired cotton textile workers, and I should point out these are all women workers, and a non-exposed comparison group. We have about 900 cotton workers and 300 reference workers. They're administered questionnaires in homes, then they're invited in to the large public hospital, to the neurological department, and they're given standardized exams. And we also draw blood for other ancillary studies, especially genotyping and blood protein measurements. We have exposure information based on measurements we've taken and a lot of historical data, so we can reconstruct their exposures quite well. The basic questions are, does endotoxin cause Parkinsonism in humans like it does in rodents? And does it also influence disease progression? And secondarily, are these effects modified by your genotype, and are proteins in your blood that you can measure pretty readily, are they predictive of disease progression? Pretty straightforward. Well, this is what we're dealing with. Enrollment is 20%. By the way, I should mention that subjects are contacted. We send nurses. These are nurses in Shanghai. They go to the subjects' homes. They try to recruit people. We have 20% enrollment. I've been doing research in Shanghai for the past 13, 14 years. We always got at least 90% participation. Why? Well, the textile industry is no longer a governmentally controlled industry like many industries in China. It's a changing world in China. And workers can now make their own decisions. They can just say no. They don't have to line up and participate. There are also, and these are things I had no clue about, there are also growing concerns among the participants about, and their family members, about invasion of privacy, identity theft, and all kinds of things that we think about happening here, but we don't think about this in the developing world, but it's happening. The other issue that we're dealing with is that the blood samples have been embargoed by the Chinese government. Now, you may know this, that for the last 10 years or so, China has not allowed DNA to go out of the country for various reasons. It used to be, you know, no problem whatsoever to get plasma and whole blood out of the country. The government says no. Why? Because they're insisting that the lab research, the assays be run in China, not here in the States. And that would be fine, but these are very specialized assays developed here, so we have to think of a plan B. By the way, I should mention at the bottom here, we've had Chinese co-investigators and partners throughout the entire history of our research, not just this one project. So here's our proposal. We're planning or would like to develop what we call a center of excellence. It would be housed in the Department of Family Preventive Medicine, and it would be for faculty across campus in the biomedical sciences, social sciences, with a focus on global health, of course, and environmental health. It would also include the humanities, which is a key point. The COE, as I mentioned, would be based in our department, FPM. Participating disciplines are listed here, and you can sort of see where that would be going. And the way we would do this, sort of practically, we'd probably start in the classroom by, you know, inviting people who want to participate in the Center of Excellence, give lectures in each other's courses, develop cross-listed courses, and then kind of ramp up to joint appointments across departments and schools. And eventually, perhaps, we could write grants together and write books together. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have time for a few questions.
I'm curious about whether there's any international component to the Center of Excellence in your mind, in part because it seems to me that some of those assays that are so critical, it may be that they want to develop excellence in China at taking exactly those same measures.
Yeah, that's a good point. I sort of think of this as the international component would be engagement by people in political science, history, who would teach us on the biomedical side of things how to function in other countries. How can we transport the technology to, I mean, China's a very, you know, relatively speaking, pretty developed for a developing economy. But how would you transport that technology to Bangladesh or lots of other places? And we need guidance how to do that. John?
Just following that question up, I think the way I would see it is you'd want a sister institution from China where they cooperate with you and we do things over there, they do things over here, they come and help. So in other words, it's the issue you raised is the Chinese want to develop the skills within their own group, and we're doing some research with them, so if we can empower them, that would be good. So this sister institution thing would be a very powerful way, I think.
Yeah, in fact, we've had a sister institution, Fudan University in Shanghai, and Zhangshan Hospital, which is part of that. But there are lots of, I'm just speaking about one example. There are hundreds of international studies that are started in the U.S., and we need to figure out sort of a cohesive way to develop sister and brother institutions around the world. It's not a simple matter. There's a lot to it, and it's unique to each country. That's why us biomedical types really need the social science input.
So the output would be developing sister institutions in the different countries?
That would be one product for sure, yeah.
Do you see a role for technology in this? Wireless devices, microfluidics, a whole bunch of things could potentially be useful, but I don't see any engineering disciplines in the...
Yeah, I I didn't want to be too broad with this. Certainly technology and you know, the vast array of technology would be important down the line. But I think to start out, we just need to develop infrastructures. How do we do research from a Western mentality in other countries? I mean, those of us who grew up here and were trained here, we have our own kind of mindset on how to do things. We have a nice collaboration with Tijuana. We need to figure out how to do that around the world. Then we can bring in the technology.
I was going to ask you if you have plans for doing epidemiological work in our border region, but also the humanities. You're mentioning that a couple times you've said it's especially important. When you say that, what are you thinking of? Is it the bioethics or?
Well, bioethics for sure, and I would also include political science. I think of that as one of the humanities, history. For instance, in our example, Asian studies would be critical for people wanting to do research in that part of the world.
We have obviously great strength in the humanities and poli-sci in China, but do we have corresponding strength in all of the places where you would foresee doing work?
I think the short answer is no, but we need to figure out how can we develop this, how can we develop strength in partner countries strategically and efficiently. So we need to train ourselves how to do this, and then we can partner, I think, effectively, not just in China. I mean, China's a special case, but in other countries.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.